with an outward knowledge.
Colleagues present, shall we start? I think other members will find us already started. Just welcome everybody to the meeting. Those who do not know me, I'm not the chair of the portfolio committee. I'm the whip of the portfolio committee. I'm chairing for today. Unfortunately, Honorable Member Fatima Cohen couldn't be with us today. She is on another engagement of Parliament. So she's not here. So I'll be chairing for today. Other apologies that we have received is from Honorable Members Kosana, Honorable Member Lopez Lawrence, and Honorable Member Sam, who is not able to come here. She's been admitted in hospital, she's not well. So, without any waste of time, colleagues, I think from the delegation we have Mr. M. Kavanda, who is leading the delegation from ELRC. And then we have Mr. M. Mushaha, who is also the Chief Financial Officer. And then we have Ms. M. O. Fok. Am I pronounced Fok? Okay. Senior Manager Negotiations. And then we have Dr. M. Amat Avowe, Executive Manager. I think these are the only delegation we have from the side of our Honorable Members, you are dealing with the annual report, the briefing on the annual report for Education, Labor and Relations Council. Without any waste of time, I think I'll give over to the leader of the delegation, Mr. M. Kavanda, to take us through the presentation, and then we'll engage it through from the inputs. Alerted that the copies that you have been slightly amended. They will circulate to the copies, but we'll follow through the presentation as well. So the ones that we have received have changed. And I think they'll take us through with the presentation. I was hoping that we'll have the copies ready when we start, the amended ones, so that we'll be able to, but I think we should be able to follow through. Over to you, Mr. Governor.
Honorable members, the chairperson, Ms. Kobayi, MP, and countrymen. It is indeed a privilege and an honor for the Education Labor Relations Council to stand before you once again to account for its activities for the period under review 2008-09. As I address you, our country faces significant challenges in public education. Clearly, public education is not what we expect it to be. The performance of our public education system is measured through examination results or numeracy tests or literacy tests. Clearly indicates that it's a system that is in need of significant review and improvement. It is equally the 15th year of our independence as a new democracy, and it's equally the 15th year of the ELRC. In making the presentation to you today, we must apologize. The first presentation we did and we circulated via Mr. Brown was one that took into account that we were only going to be allowed a certain amount of time. But when we received a call from the chairperson, the Honorable Fatima Chuan, we were then given an indication that we'd have a longer interactive session with you today. And so we've updated the presentation. That's what we have done. So the slides that you have there are full material. None of them have changed. What we have done is updated the slides. We've added more slides and more information in that we would be covering. I've also taken the liberty of bringing some additional documentation as I had an opportunity to talk to the chairperson at the end of June, beginning of July, when we had our teacher development summit, that there were many new members that have joined the Basic Education Portfolio Committee. And so to bring you up to speed with some of the history that has in terms of the research that the council has undertaken. I've also taken the liberty, especially around dispute resolution, to bring for the first time a sample of arbitration awards that deals with a range of matters that affect public education. These were questions that were asked Chairperson in the past. And so, if I may be allowed to sit so I can go through my presentation. Thank you. As we celebrate the 15th year of our existence, the ELRC has chosen the theme of negotiating professionalism in public education through sound labor relations. We believe that teachers are first and foremost professionals who provide a social service in the field of public education and accordingly have to uphold professional ethics, values, and standards. And to this end, negotiations in the Education Labor Relations Council must significantly focus on professionalism amongst educators as the cornerstone of the development of policies that emerge from the Education Labor Relations Council. And those policies are normally reflected in collective agreements. And so it is indeed a privilege and honor once again for us to present this report to you at the most challenging time that we have in our country. Equally, our president has been at the forefront of ensuring that teachers are in classrooms on time and teaching. And so a bit of our presentation will equally focus on the quality learning and teaching campaign that the Education Labor Relations Council is spearheading in this country. The presentation is going to be conducted on the basis that I will do the introduction and compliance report. I will also do programs one, which is the dispute resolution. I'll be assisted in program two and three by Ms. Nolasindiso Foka, the Senior Manager for Collective Bargaining Services. I will then do a bit of the executive services myself. Our CFO, Mr. Moshaga, will deal with the financial status and position of the ELRC. In respect of our HIV/AIDS program, which we call the ELRC-PCPA, I will have Dr. Puleng Ramatabue, who is our executive director program, and then I will do the conclusion. So we ask you to just bear with us whilst we ask the relevant people at appropriate times to come forward. Our vision is to strive for the continuous maintenance and promotion of labor peace. To accomplish in the spirit of the parties to the council, that is the state and the trade union, working together and contributing towards transformation and development of a quality South African public education sector. Our mission as a bargaining council is to be a leading provider of quality, effective, efficient, and non-partisan administration and facilitative mechanisms for labor peace in the development of a quality South African public education sector. I can take this opportunity to inform members of Parliament that The ELRC is the only bargaining council in the country that is PFMA compliant. We've made that decision when our Director General, Mr. Hindle, was still a chief director and a leader of the state in the ELRC, to voluntarily subscribe to the Public Finance Management Act to ensure greater accountability and transparency. The values that we hold as an organization is that we value the people we serve and those for whom we work. And we serve teachers in the first instance, but we believe we serve the South African public and the child, and the child comes first. We commit ourselves to be fair and ethical, trustworthy and accountable. We endeavor to be customer service orientated, striving to meet the needs of the people of our country. We aim to work together as a team. We strive to achieve and maintain excellence in all that we do, and working towards the highest standards of performance that is achievable and focusing on professionalism. We strive to promote communication. We commit ourselves to the development and capacity building of our staff through learning and growth. We encourage innovation, and we commit to our work and to the vision and mission of the ELRC. We believe over the last 15 years we fulfilled our mandate to promote and maintain labor peace in public education. We must not confuse public education with the public service. In public education, the last major strike that teachers conducted in the ELRC was in 1997. And to that extent, we've managed to maintain labor peace. We've had occasional skirmishes that have occurred in public education, the last notable one being the teachers in Soweto, who ultimately had to go back as a matter of urgency. We are celebrating 15 years of excellence and contribution towards public education. We've amended our constitution to include the further education and training colleges sector in a bargaining unit. So as we stand before you today, members, we have two bargaining units in the ELRC. One is basic education, and the other is the further education and training colleges sector bargaining unit. We have contributed towards and we've managed the quality learning and teaching campaign, which I alluded to in my introduction, as being a significant area we believe that we have to focus on in order to get teachers in classroom and teaching as a precondition to improving the results for our children in the classroom. At the same time, we are working towards teacher development post the summit, and we have processes that we are unfolding to improve the qualifications and the quality of our teachers so that we can have better outcomes for our children. In terms of Government Gazette 32207, the ELRC is coordinating the work to ensure that the laptop initiative for teachers is going to unfold later this year or early next year, in which we'd encourage every teacher to take a laptop into the classroom so that our children can benefit from the technology that is available. At the same time, we are in year two of our HIV/AIDS intervention program, which we call the Prevention, Care, and Treatment Access, that we manage on behalf of the trade union. In terms of applicable legislation, the ELRC has to comply as an employer with the, and in terms of delivering its service. In terms of delivering its service, it has to comply with the Labor Relations Act number 66 of 1995, the Public Finance Management Act number 1 of 1999, the Promotion of Access to Information Act 54 2002, the Employment of Educators Act 76 of 1998, and now we also have to comply with the Further Education and Training Colleges Act 16 of 2006, and that gives us the mandate and prescribes the manner in which our council must function. The supporting legislation to assist in our role as the employer is the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, the Employment Equity Act, the Skills Development Act, and other employment legislation. Litigation and appeals. During the period under review, the ERRC did not defend or engage in any court action. Neither were we taken to court on any specific matter. What we need to clarify is the ERRC is taken on review to the Labor Court, the Labor Appeal Court, and any other courts in respect of the arbitration awards, rulings that we have issued. But that is the normal course of the review of an award. Later on, I will talk to you about some of the awards. The number of awards taken on review for the period under review has increased from 17 in the past previous financial year to 23 in the last. The accounting officer's report, the primary business of our council, we have two core areas. The first is the promotion and maintenance of labor peace through the provision of dispute resolution services. To this end, the Labor Relations Act compels us to resolve disputes that emanate in the sector. The secondary business is collective bargaining. And collective bargaining is in the form of negotiations, consultations, and information sharing, a forum in which the state and the trade unions can develop policy that ultimately should contribute to professionalism and the improvement of outcomes in public education. In terms of disputes referred, we have a history going back to 1998, and we can see compared to 2007 2008 financial year, which was 955, to 2008-09, 575. So the trend is that the number of disputes are dropping. That means parties are able to meet and resolve issues more amongst themselves than formal disputes being declared. The only blip is 955. That was because of a class action dispute where about 400 or so were collated as one dispute that had to, or a set of disputes on a matter relating to circuit managers. The kinds of disputes we have is the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, remuneration matters, 14%. Unfair labor practices, generally may largely be promotions and appointments, 59%. Unfair dismissals, 18%. And interpretation and application of collective agreements, 9%. So that is more a pie chart reflecting the same. The dispute refers to a province. If we take it, Gauteng has a significant drop. That's the blip area where we had this collation of disputes. We will see that Eastern Cape is slightly on the rise, KZN, as well as Western Cape. The trend is increasingly Western Cape is increasing in the number of disputes being declared compared to other provinces. In the previous years, KwaZulu-Natal used to have the highest percentage of disputes, at one stage 60%, and that is dropping significantly. When this council started in the 95 period, Western Cape used to have the highest percentage of the students. So we're heading to the same in the next few years. Labor court review. There's only 23 that we're taking on, but we're just showing you in the period 2005 to 2008 compared to the last financial year. So we've got, we indicate where we are being taken on review. Gauteng is the province where the highest number of awards are being taken on review. Not necessarily by the Gauteng Department of Education, but the parties in that province. I've taken the liberty of wanting to share some very important awards, because in the past years we kept getting asked questions about what kind of awards. So we have, Chairperson, made copies of selected awards from the year. It's called All Members. We do have. It's in the box in the back, if it can be passed out, Chair. I'm not going to read through each of the awards, but I'll just deal with them in summary form. All these awards will be posted on the website. They have been issued, so they are public knowledge and public information. They are not private and confidential to any individual. And therefore, you are at liberty to read the full awards and deal with matters. I first focused on unfair dismissals. That's an indication of what the employers are doing or departments are doing out there about enforcing values and standards. Educator, in this case, Kamal, PSES is referring to the case number 372-0809 is the year in which that dispute was declared. And WC is Western Cape, the province. So that gives you an idea if you look at the format that we use throughout. The educator was dismissed for sexual relationship with a learner who was a minor in terms of Section 17 and Section 18. And in terms of Section 17, dismissal is mandatory. Okay. The outcome is that the applicant's case was dismissed, and the dismissal was upheld. In the next case, Makubalo, the educator was dismissed for committing an act of sexual conduct on another employee and mismanaging school funds, both charged in terms of Section 17 and Section 18. The applicant's claim was dismissed. The applicant is the educator. The dismissal was upheld. We also have Chauke. Educator was dismissed for assaulting his principal. And also in Section 17, the applicant's case was dismissed and the dismissal was upheld. All these awards that I referred to are in this bundle for your reading later. In the case of Moguera, in the province of Northwest, the educator was dismissed for assaulting a learner. That's a Section 17 charge. The outcome, the dismissal upheld on the substantive fairness. That means they found that he was, on the balance of probability, guilty, but they found that the department did not follow the procedures. So they only awarded a compensation of 1 month for procedural unfairness, but the dismissal was upheld. In the case of Mashlangu in Gauteng, educator was dismissed for having sexual relations with a learner. Section 17, here again dismissed. We have Moloi. For sexual assault, rape, and impregnating a learner. Okay? And this is Free State. The dismissal was upheld. Then we have unfair dismissals contribute. The ticket is April, Western Cape, was dismissed for carrying a firearm without permission into state premises under the influence whilst on duty, discharging the firearm whilst on duty, endangering the safety of a learner in resulting in a bullet narrowly missing the learner. That's the Section 17 matter. The dismissal was upheld on substantive grounds but found to be procedurally unfair. We have to distinguish between the actual thing being substantively unfair and procedurally unfair as warranted in the Labor Relations Act. And so the dismissal was upheld, but the employee was merely awarded 3 months' compensation salary for procedural unfairness. Unfair labor practice relating to promotions, appointments, and demotions. This is the bulk of our dispute. 59% of our dispute relates to this area. So this is too many. We've just chosen a sample. Neptosa on the in respect of a matter in the Eastern Cape. They have educated alleged unfair labor practice relating to demotion in terms of Section 186.2 of the Labor Relations Act. The applicant's claim was dismissed. In respect of Man in the Western Cape, the educator alleged unfair labor practice relating to promotion, alleging unfair discrimination. The test to be applied in order to determine whether there was an unfair discrimination. Affirmative action measures. Such measures are in defense to a claim of unfair discrimination provided for, and they meet the requirements of fairness. And the requirements for fairness, rationality, and proportionality are consistent with the purpose of the EEA. The applicant's claim was dismissed as the decision of the first respondent to appoint the second respondent is confirmed. Promotions and appointments disputes are important, members, in that they sometimes affect when candidates who are promoted take their places in school. And so as a consequence, if these cases are not handled speedily, you will find schools without proper management. And so that's the pressure that exists on us to manage this fight. And so I do not intend going through all the other ones, just to cite them for you and give you some ideas in that respect. As this is merely the sample that we have, there is a fair balance on the probabilities of where between the applicants and the employers. Generally, the departments win more cases than the applicants. Training and development. In order to improve quality within dispute resolution processes, we invest in training. We have trained dispute resolution practitioners in the last financial year on dispute resolution procedures, the law of evidence, and effective preparation and representation in arbitration. We do not operate here where we must win at all costs. We have to decide matters on the balance of probability and in the interest of education and the child. It's not a court case where we're running from one court to the next. Panelists have been trained in areas that include recent and relevant case law as they emerge from the Constitutional Court and other courts on dispute resolution procedures and the quality of award. In the last year, we've also focused on issues of professionalism and the safe code of ethics, which panelists are required to take into account when dealing with unfair dismissal matters. I will now be assisted by Ms. Volker.
Chairperson and the Honourable Members, As the General Secretary has alluded on earlier, one of our mandates is to maintain and promote labor peace within the public education sector. And in doing that, parties to the ELRC concluded a collective agreement, which is number 2 of 2007, which makes provision for full-time shop stewards to deliver on the union work in terms of carrying out that mandate of promoting and maintaining labor peace. This collective agreement enables the ELRC to deliver dispute prevention support services and the appointment of trade union officials to facilitate negotiation, that is, in terms of concluding collective agreements, consultation, dispute resolution, and dispute prevention. The collective agreement makes provision for 120 shop stewards, which is distributed in terms of the number of shop stewards that each union gets to be entitled to per province. The 120 number is fixed. The only variation happens in terms of allocation. Members will also note that previously, when the General Secretary was doing the presentation, he made reference to NAPTOSA, SATU, and that. But if you see on this slide, we are only referring to CTU SATU and CTU SAOU. CTU stands for Combined Trade Union. This came as a result of our collective agreement number 1 of 2006, wherein our threshold was increased to 50,000, which necessitated that all unions that do not have the members that makes up 50,000 form a working together agreement with those to make up the 50,000 threshold. Hence, you will see CTU SATU. CTU SATU is in working agreement with CTPA and CTU SAOU, which has been recently changed to CTU ITU as of this financial year. But previously, they were operating as CTU SAOU, that is made up of PEU, NATU, SAOU, PSA, and NAPTO. Sorry, and NAPTO, sir. Excuse me. Part of the work of the full-time shop stewards, it is to represent educators in disciplinary and CONEP hearings, as was alluded earlier on in the presentation on dispute prevention services, dispute resolution services. They've also represented unions in negotiations and consultation, both at national and provincial level. Involvement in the HIV-AIDS intervention program. Dr. Buleng will be talking in detail in terms of the PCTA program. They've also assisted and communicated with educators about education, employment, and trade union-related matters. Part of their work also is to assist the trade unions in monitoring the employer's compliance with the provisions of collective agreements and work-related laws, and workplace-related laws. They also have a responsibility to report on any alleged contravention of a workplace-related provision of any law and any collective agreement binding on an employer and an employee and the trade union and responsible authority or agents. Then, as I've mentioned earlier on, that part of the work of these full-time shop stewards is to represent their members in the collective bargaining process. In the past financial year that we're reporting, we have concluded collective agreement number 3 of 2008, which is vote ways for trade unions that are parties to council. That collective agreement simply determines how many seats is each union entitled to in the collective bargaining processes. Then we've also concluded collective agreement number 4, which talked to the amendment of the ELRC Constitution, as also it was alluded to earlier on, that the introduction of the FETC Act number 16 of 2006 necessitated that the ELRC reviews and amends its constitution to cater for educators or lecturers in that sector. Hence, we concluded that agreement. We also concluded agreement number 5 of 2008, which related to the establishment of a bargaining unit to provide a forum for bargaining for the educators or lecturers that are in the FET sector. As previously, we were only catering for the general public educators which were employed in terms of the EEA, but now educators, some educators were previously employed in terms of the EEA, transferred their employment in terms of the FETC Act. Then we concluded Collective Agreement Number 1 of 2009, a further amendment to the ELRC Constitution, which was also in line with the introduction of the FETC Act. At the provincial level, we concluded, before I make mention of the collective agreements that have been concluded at the provincial level, it is no secret, Honorable Mbonjani, that our performance at a provincial level has been questioned in the previous years. And it is also important for us to note that our executive committee have since taken a decision to run a workshop with all the provincial leaders to share the best practices in order to improve on the performance of all those provinces. So it is important for us to note, because we know that we are on record in the previous years wherein our performance at a provincial level has been questionable. We have concluded collective agreement number 1 of 2008 in Eastern Cape, which related to the permanent appointment of temporary educators in vacant substantive posts. KZN, we have concluded a collective agreement number 1 of 2008, the grievance procedure for ending school-based promotion grievances. Collective agreement number 2 of 2008 in KZN, which talks to the procedures for dealing with institution-based educators who have been displaced as a result of work-related violence or intimidation. We've also concluded collective agreement number 1 of 2008 of Mpumalanga, which related to permanent appointment of temporary educators in vacant substantive posts. There we are showing a graph of performance in comparison with the national, with the provincial. We have started in 2008. You can see it is indicated by show of the graph that the collective agreements that have been concluded at the provincial level have been significantly lower than those that are concluded at the national level. The only difference is only in the years of 2006 and 2007. And when we tabled that report, we did indicate as to what led to that significant drop in the performance of the national office in terms of concluding collective agreements. That was mainly due to the labor unrest that prevailed in the public sector at large, which mainly affected our activities in the bargaining council. I thank you, Chairperson.
I will come back to our performance in collective bargaining in my conclusion. In terms of the executive services, we are responsible for management, intervention, and facilitation. The first is that one of the pictures that you saw earlier of the four leaders of the party, that was in Tembisa and in Midrand when we sent a delegation with the Director General and the General Secretaries and Presidents of the trade unions to speak out against xenophobia and the xenophobic attacks that were taking place in the Gauteng area. Second, it is the intervention in the FETC sector with potential labor unrest in KwaZulu-Natal in particular. So that spent quite a bit of our time. Not mentioned here is equally the work we are still doing in the Eastern Cape to get parties going, and that is on track. And also of late is the, let's call it, the skirmish between the trade unions and the Department of Education in KwaZulu-Natal. On that matter, I can tell you I was in KwaZulu-Natal on Friday the 16th, playing backup. We have successfully concluded an agreement to get the parties working together. A relationship-building exercise will be taking place on the 5th and 6th of November, and the chamber will be functional once again. That We've had a number of meetings both with the MEC and the HIV with regard. In terms of our HIV-AIDS intervention program, Dr. Puleng is going to speak about that separately, but we also have done work in terms of our quality learning and teaching campaign, our teacher laptop initiative for educators, and the teacher development. If I can talk about the quality learning and teaching campaign, the Education Labor Relations Council, in its commitment to professionalism and heeding the call of our president in terms of getting teachers back to the classroom on time and teaching, means that we're going to have to, in addition to just charging educators, is to advocate that these are the standards that we want out there, so that the poorest of the poor, who are the most affected by the deviant conduct of educators, is minimized. And so the Minister of Education, together with her officials in the department and the education trade union leaders, have undertaken this campaign. And this work began from the 5th of September 2008. Most recently, our minister hosted a business breakfast in Johannesburg, soliciting the support of business to come on board in terms of the quality learning and teaching campaign. This has to be the cornerstone in which we begin to turn the tide against, I would call, the slide of public education in recent times. And we all are going to have to ensure that whatever we do, we do not disrupt the school day, and we ensure the teachers are there and teaching on time. It is the most significant challenge we have. A few years ago, we had the culture of learning and teaching, our course campaign. Okay? And now we are back on a quality learning and teaching campaign. Surely, we're going to have to do more things in public education over the next year or two in order to ensure that we are turning the tide against poor performance in our schools. We will be reporting in greater detail next year on the further work that is done in the Quality Learning and Teaching Campaign. Currently, Trust 2 of the MECs, which are responsible for the Quality Learning and Teaching Campaign, have also been involved. And so there will be an integrated involvement of the MECs and the Cluster Committee together with the trade unions in driving this campaign. In respect of the laptop initiative for teachers, Government Gazette 32207 requires the General Secretary to do quite a few things. We started that work in May. We've met with all laptop manufacturers we had invited. Bona fide, reputable laptop manufacturers, all connectivity suppliers that include, we have about five major ones in this country, Neotel, Telcom, iBus, Vodacom, MTN, they were invited, together with Microsoft South Africa, Symantec South Africa, Intel South Africa, and AMD. And the idea was to get the manufacturers and connectivity suppliers and software suppliers to put a bundle that is cost-effective. Teachers merely will get 130 rand allowance to a maximum of 390. And so that process resulted in a report I have prepared and have handed to the DG. The trade union leaders in the DG would have to meet to finalize that before it's forwarded to the minister. We still have some work to do. Yesterday, on my way to this meeting, I met with Symantec South Africa to secure the discounted, we can't use the word free, discounted antivirus software that would be loaded on the program. The proposal that we've made is a one-stop that will allow teachers, if they choose from the 10 or 12 consortiums that has put their proposals to get the product with the software, with the insurance, and the finance included in one place. The teacher is free to buy from any supplier he or she wants, including those not even on that list. But obviously it should cost them more. The one thing I can inform you is, like, when we negotiated with Vodacom and MTN, the connectivity suppliers, we were able to drop down the price of connectivity for teachers, which we would not get for you and I in the price market, to about 145 rand for 500 gigs. And so that's the significance of that exercise in driving the prices down. That report, once the DG has received it, I'm sure will be made publicly available to all. A special website will be published in this regard. The teacher development, also starting on the 1st of September 2008, the minister had agreed with the trade unions on working towards addressing issues of teacher development. On the 1st of April 2009, we convened the round table in Midrand, and then we followed that up at the end of June, beginning of July, with the Teacher Development Summit, and now we engage in the post-summit processes, which is largely driven by the Department of Education and the ELRC and the Secretariat, to address all issues of teacher development and looking at proposals finally emerging around April 2010. In terms of our employees, as a council, we are committed to improving the skills of our employees. We as a council pay fully for our staff's education and training and development. And so through that, we hopefully would improve the opportunities. We have some good stories to share. At least two employees who started lower, one as a cleaner, improved their qualification and is now going to be appointed an officer. Another employee who started as an officer is being promoted through our learning program to a finance clerk. So through that, we are able to create opportunities for our staff. I'll now call the CFO to take us.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable members, we have been listening to all the programs and the projects in which the Education Labour Relations Council is involved in. Now, I will be presenting how we have allocated resources in order to support those programs and projects, and also how we have managed to operate in times where a lot of demands have been placed on us in order to positively contribute towards the labor peace and public education. Now, let me point out that the Education Labor Relations Council's funding model is as follows. We have two parties, which is the employer and the employees. And we, being a bargaining council, we talk about the employer and the employee, and the funding is coming from the employer 50% and 50% from the employee. The employees are basically the educators, and the employers are the 9 provincial departments of education, because that is where the educators are being paid and budgeted for. So if we look at the revenue, which is the funding model that's coming in, we have gone back to 2005, where we would like to indicate how the funds on that model has been coming in and how we have been managing it. Since the ELRC was established 15 years ago, there has been no increase in terms of the levies that the educator and the employer were contributing until 2007. And that is why if you look at that presentation, up to 2007, the income has relatively been the same based on what we have presented. In fact, those figures have been rounded off to the nearest 100,000. So if you look at 2005, we're talking about 14,936,000. And in 2007, around about July, August, the negotiations were started in order to increase levies to fund the programs and projects that were increasingly being allocated to the Education Labor Relations Council to contribute towards the objectives of the council. Now, at the beginning when we started, the contributions were really 2 rand from an educator, and for every 2 rand, the employer would match that 2 rand in a 50-50%. And in 2007, which fell in the 2007-2008 financial year, that's where we see that big increase from 14 to 36. So that increase was from a low base of 2 rand and it went to a high of 10 rand. And that was 5 rand for the employer and 5 rand for the employee. And I think I need to indicate maybe at this time that during negotiations for the increase in those levies, it was agreed that the bulk of that increase would be spent and allocated to the prevention of disputes. So in this case where the senior manager for negotiation services has also touched on full-time shop stewards in education. So since then, the increase that was allocated, more than 30% of that is allocated and earmarked for shop stewards in education. Now, in 2009, which is the financial year that we are covering, that is the first financial year that we are covering a full year increase, which came into effect in the middle of 2007. I'll go to the next slide. Then we come to the expenditure that we incur based on the income that we get. In terms of the Public Finance Management Act, we are not allowed to budget for the deficit. And I think as we go to the next, when we go to the next slide, we will realize that in some of the years, we are showing expenditure here, which was more than what the revenue was coming in. It's also in line with the income that was coming in from 2005. And then it started going up basically in 2009. We started from a base of 18 5 years ago. We are sitting nearly double at 35,600,000. Now, I just wanted to indicate there also the difference between the income and the expenditure, where in the first years of those 5 years was resulting in a deficit. In 2005, we had a deficit of 3 million. In 2006, it went up to a deficit of 7 million. In 2007, there was also a deficit of 7 million. Now, what we do is during the good years where our income exceed expenditure, we accumulate that into reserves or accumulated funds, which we use during the times where the expenditure exceeds our income in terms of our budgeting. So we use the accumulated reserves to supplement our income in order to balance our budget. So we don't really budget for a deficit, but, you know, during the budgeting process, we supplement the revenue that we show with the accumulated funds in order to balance it. Now, I would also like to touch on future developments which will be affecting us as a public entity in terms of firstly reporting and also in terms of auditing by the Auditor General. In terms of reporting, we have the accounting standard boards which are prescribing ways that public entities should be reporting as compared to what we used to do and use as reporting like in the private sector. Now, as an example, budget variances. When we budget in terms of the allocation of resources, there is bound to be differences. Now, in terms of the new reporting requirements in the future, we would have to report to Parliament in terms of why we had variances in terms of what we had budgeted for. And most important, we need to explain why those variances occurred, because this is tied to the allocation of the resources in terms of delivery of service, and therefore it needs to tie into reasons that will be given in terms of the performance of the Council in meeting its objectives. And performance information in terms of reporting also, we will in future be reporting formally on top of the financial reporting on performance information. It is a requirement which at the Education Labor Relations Council, we voluntarily subjected ourselves to a review by the Auditor General for the last 5 years in terms of acquainting ourselves with better reporting requirements relating to performance information. So those are the future developments that will be coming in, whereby we have to not only report on the financial performance, but also in terms of the performance information, which is within the framework as prescribed by the National Treasury. Now, from the audit point of view also, it's tied back to what I was talking about in terms of reporting, whereby, as an example, performance information used to be reviewed by the Auditor General, and as from the 2009-2010 financial year, performance information is going to be audited and must be reported separate from the financial reporting of the Auditor General. And there are also developments relating to standards of reporting. GRAP is generally recognized accounting practice. We used to be subjected to generally to GAAP, generally accounting acceptable practices. Now the public sector as such, we are moving from GAAP and we are getting into the GRAP reporting requirements, and that needs to be in compliance with the audit requirements of the Auditor General. We have been put through a number of workshops with National Treasury and the Auditor General's office, whereby we are starting to prepare and also to know what to expect in terms of preparation of our financial and performance information to be subjected to audit. The following slide indicate what we have covered initially in more detail. What I need to indicate is in terms of that slide, you can realize that from 2008 we started accumulating those surpluses. We had 9 million in 2008. We have two in 2009. We have 15 million, which is in excess of what we had used alongside the revenue that we received. But it would look like we are accumulating a lot of revenue which is not being used. But we have already submitted at the end of September this year, in terms of the requirements, the budget, the three-year budget for the 2010 up to 2013, whereby we have already started using those accumulated funds in the year 2010, 2011, and by 2013 we would have exhausted those accumulated surpluses. So what it really means is from next year we should start negotiations in terms of making sure that levies which we are receiving are being increased in order to meet future development. I must also point out, in terms of the levies received, the presentations have included the Further Education and Training Colleges Act, which came into effect in 2006, but effectively the figures that I have presented does not include any of the activities relating to income coming from that sector. And that will only start being reported on from the 2009-2010 financial year, because it was only with effect from August of 2009 that a separate bargaining unit was formed within the ELRC after having changed the constitution. Now, the next slide indicates the financial position, which normally shows the health of an organization. And I'm proud to report that as we stand now, the health of the Education Labor Relations Council is satisfactory. We are in a position to meet all our commitments based on what we have at the moment. We have assets which amount to 58 million. The bulk of that is cash which we have on hand. And that cash is there to ensure that the commitments that we have can be met without any problems. And the other major fact is 7 million of our total assets is invested in a building that we own. We are not paying any rental for the premises that we use. We use the building that the Education Labor Relations owns. So that's really the bulk of what we have in terms of assets. The next slide will indicate the liabilities and commitments which the assets are there to support. And the major liability there is in trade and receivables of 22 million. And of that 22 million, the bulk of it, about 80% of that, is commitments which we have to honor relating to shop stewards in education. And the rest, basically, as we indicated, designated funds. Designated funds really means accumulated funds that we have in order to use to supplement our income for our future operations starting from 2010 onwards. Thank you very much. I think I will hand over to Dr. Buleng to do a presentation on the PCT.
Chairperson, honorable members, I have the pleasure today presenting to you our HIV/AIDS program. The project was designed to respond to the findings of the study that was commissioned by the ELRC in 2005. And among other things, the study found that 12.7% of educators were already living with HIV/AIDS. And the ELRC took a mandate in collaboration with the Department of Education to implement a comprehensive mitigation program. The program is funded by the U.S. government through the Center for Disease Control, and we are in the third year of a five-year cycle. It started way back in 2007. And my presentation today will present to you the results of year one and year two of the project. As I have indicated earlier, the goal is to prevent the spread of HIV/AIDS and to mitigate the negative impact on the educators and their families. And we do that by expanding access to voluntary counseling and testing services. We provide antiretroviral therapy through our treatment partners, and we provide care and support to those that are already living with HIV/AIDS. And we make sure that everyone that is tested HIV positive is screened for TB and gets appropriate treatment. The operational structure is made up of committees, and the highest committee is the governance committee, which is made up of union leaders that provide leadership and support to the project. And under the governance committee is the general secretary of the ELRC and the principal investigator of the project, Mr. Govender, who reports to the governance committee but oversees the project and provides leadership. Under him is the operations committee that is made up of project coordinators from different unions that are participating in the project. And there is also the project secretariat that is made up of five professionals who are led by myself, and we provide technical support to the project. So this is the operational structure of the project. So what model of implementation are we using in the project? We use the cascading HIV/AIDS peer education, where the union leaders are trained as master trainers who train peer educators, and peer educators in turn reach out to educators in schools with prevention messages. We are really very proud to present this project because it is a unique project. We may all know that the characteristic of the South African pandemic is very feminized. A majority of people that are living with HIV/AIDS are women. And our project has a high proportion of women educators. And the teachers in themselves are people that are able to impart knowledge. And empowering educators in HIV/AIDS is quite a unique thing, and we believe this is why our project is unique. And it is implemented through the union structures that are able to mobilize communities and effect social change. Just to share with you the Year One program, it was launched in 2008. And in the first year, there were three union partners participating in the project. NAPTOSA representing 48,000 members, NATU 28,000, and SAOU, which represented 24,000 members. And we have our technical partners, like the American Federation of Teachers, who provide technical assistance and ensure that we comply to the U.S. government regulations and meet the donor requirements. And there's Academy for Educational Development, who provide training, monitoring and evaluation services, and technical assistance, and a network of medical practitioners from the Tepang Trust provide voluntary counseling and testing services, as well as antiretroviral therapy. So Year One really was characterized by mobilization of union members, setting up systems for implementation. And here I present to you the results of Year One. And I must mention that our reporting is actually in line with the donor requirements. The donor has set indicators that we must actually report to ensure that we are achieving the goals that we are set to achieve. And the reporting is actually in three thematic areas. The first one is prevention. The second one is voluntary counseling and testing. And the third one is system strengthening, because the donor makes sure that while we implement the project, we can strengthen the organizations to ensure sustainability. So this slide shows results in year one of the prevention results. So we measure the number of educators that were reached through community outreach promoting prevention through abstinence and be faithful. And in year one, because it was still early in the conception of the project, unfortunately we did not meet our target. We had said 10,800 educators would be reached, but unfortunately the project was only able to reach 4,000, just about 4,000. And the second one, the second indicator that the donor always ensures that happens is training of educators in prevention. And here we had set ourselves a target of 533, and that target was exceeded. We reached 750. And these are results that were shared between the three participating unions. And the last indicator was the number of educators that were trained through condom use and other methods of prevention. And here again, we exceeded our target. We had said 470 educators would be trained, and the project trained 750. And I must apologize that the results, the accurate results of year one are in the report that has been circulated. Unfortunately, one slide just was repeated a few times, but the results are in the report. My apologies. Then I will move on to year two program, which started in October 2008 and just ended in September 31st. In year two, additional new unions joined the program, PEU representing 18,000 members, and CTPA with 5,500 members. And year two was characterized by peer education and systems strengthening. The master trainers that were trained in year one were now actively going out to train peer educators who would in turn reach out to their peers in schools. And in year two, we were able to identify three models of outreach. So prevention messages are conveyed during union-based events and meetings. And secondly, there's school-based outreach, where teachers during break or teacher development time, they conduct sessions in HIV/AIDS. And some collaboration with the Department of Education and SATU was initiated in year two, where we make sure that collaboratively we can implement HIV/AIDS activities. In year two, we held our strategic planning workshop, and we revisited the results of the baseline study to make sure that our interventions are aligned to the baseline results. And in this table, I present the year two results, and I'm proud to say in all of the areas, we exceeded our targets, in almost all of them. So in the three thematic areas of prevention through abstinence and being faithful, prevention through condom use and other methods of prevention, and in all areas, we make sure we reach out to educators and we train educators to be able to convey those messages. And another indicator that we must actually report is the number of service outlets providing counseling and testing according to national and international standards. And here we mean that every union must make sure that during events and activities, they must make voluntary counseling and testing services accessible. So all the four unions provide these services. There's only one SAU who prevent, who implement a very limited in scope program. And this is because of the low prevalence rate that was actually found in the baseline study. So out of the five, the four unions make sure that voluntary counseling and testing services are provided during the events and training sessions. And we also need to measure the number of educators and family members who receive HIV counseling and testing and receive results. We know that once you test and you know your status, you are able to access the services and treatment early if you find that you are HIV positive. But voluntary counseling and testing is actually a very strong prevention strategy, and we provide these services in our project. We have exceeded our target here as well. We had set ourselves 1,300 educators who test, and actually we exceeded the target and tested 2,194 in the second year. And we also provide training in counseling. We train educators as lay counselors to make sure that they can provide psychosocial support to educators that are infected with HIV and provide counseling support. So we have also exceeded our target. We had set 50 and we trained 91, a total of 91 in the second year. So what have been the challenges in the project? We are challenged by institutionalizing peer education in schools. I think because of the quality learning and teaching campaign, teachers are compelled and must be in classrooms, and it leaves very limited time to implement our project in schools. So most of the time we use holidays, weekends, and as far as possible, union events. This is a challenge. And we cannot actually find sustainable funding sources. Our project at the moment is entirely funded from donor funding, and this is a threat to sustainability. And we have not also been able to actually link the monitoring and evaluation system of the project to the national system, which is a challenge, but we are working on those challenges in year three. And there have been a few lessons that we have learned in the project that we would like to share with you. And one of them is that close collaboration with the Department of Education will actually assure greater impact, because most of the teachers are governed by the department, and a lot of events and campaigns that are implemented in the project can actually drive and implement some of the activities, which can actually achieve greater results. And we have also learned that alone as the PCTA, we cannot actually win this battle. Strategic partnerships with other groups in the HIV/AIDS community actually is very beneficial. And as we look ahead in year three, which has just started the beginning of October, we are actively going to pursue close collaboration with the department, particularly at the provincial level. And we are going to build internal capacity of the union partners in monitoring and evaluation to make sure that we monitor implementation and we can actually report to the national MNE system. And we are actually aiming to implement clearly defined models of outreach, and we are going to try and standardize them across all participating unions. And we have revisited the HSRC baseline results to make sure that we can implement all the recommendations, so that by when the time comes to do another comparative study, we will have addressed most of the recommendations and achieved higher impact. And we will try to redirect resources to high prevalence areas and targeting the high risk groups. We will actively pursue partnerships with our partners to share best practices. We will share best practices with groups like SATU, and we will get as much support from the donor, the technical support that they provide to implementing partners. And we will actually seek partnerships with NGOs in the areas where we work to achieve greater results. And we continue to use evidence-based best practices that are based on research. And we will strengthen internal capacity in monitoring and evaluation as we engage experts in this year three to do our monitoring and evaluation capacity building. And we will make sure that our strategy continually are aligned to the National Strategic Plan of 2007 to 2011 for long-term sustainability. This is all my presentation. Thank you.
Janet, can I ask you to just wrap up so that we allow time for members to interact?
Thanks, Chairperson. We have included another present booklet for you that all the research we've undertaken. So that's in a separate pack that you can look at. In conclusion, if we look at the issue of income, clearly the funding of the higher education and training sector, the FETC Bargaining Council, cannot sustain itself, and we will have to cross-subsidize the sector to the tune of over $1 million just for its first year of operations. So that's what the red indicates there. The FETC sector will rely on money from the basic education sector. If we look at where we are going to as a council, so ultimately we're going to have two broad sector chambers, and within those chambers, four bargaining units, the educators and the non-educators in education, basic education, the lecturers and the non-lecturers. If I can then sum up the performance, it is no longer sufficient that we just measure the performance of the ELRC based on the number of collective agreements. The real measure is going to be is how those agreements are contributing towards an improved learning outcomes for children in our schools. The slow pace of negotiations in the ELRC on the OSD perhaps may have seriously compromised or delayed the benefits that would have accrued to educators. So the parties would have to engage in faster processes in the collective bargaining. But more importantly, we can no longer, as a bargaining council of teachers, look at matters in a parochial sense of just what it benefits the teacher. The value of the collective agreement is in the outcome that it hopes to achieve in improving learning outcomes of our children. Professionalism has become the cornerstone as we move into the next 5 years, 16 to 20 years of this council, as the basis upon which we would measure what we do. Provincial chambers in themselves, if we function effectively nationally, there is no need for them to sign a single agreement in a province, because a province can only sign an agreement unique to that problem. And if we look at matters in education, it will be very difficult for me to find what is a matter unique to a problem. They generally are across all problems, whether it's temporary teachers, displaced educators, etc. So clearly, that's the challenge that we have about what is it we do with collective bargaining. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the presentation. I think I allowed some time in terms of the details while the presentation was going ahead, because I thought it was important for us to make sure that we get the details and understand what is really happening in Asian Labour Relations Council. Honourable members, I'm going to open for hands for comments and questions, and then later allow the delegation to respond on the issues raised. Shall I note hands? Honourable members, Mang. Honourable Gina. Honourable Mpojana. Oh, Honourable Makubele. In that order. Shall we take Honourable Smiles first?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, my questions will be very general. And some of the questions, that I will go into the programs itself. But let me start by appreciating the presentation first. And also as a word of encouragement to the ELRC to say that a picture tells a thousand stories. And I've seen your book and the four pictures, especially the one of the orchestra and the one at the end, which is very symbolic and very informative, I would say. To me, it represents that you want people to sing from the same song sheet, apart from the harmony and the peace that you want. That's very good. It's very visionary. But what is very... No, I will leave that to the Honorable Sitek. He wants to all of us to sing, which is not bad, but that's a debate for another day. Then the last picture, actually, on that on your front page is most important. I think the end users of the labor peace that you want, the end users, are our children. So, to me, I was very appreciative of that. But now, let me then ask the critical question when I was sitting here. Shop stewards is one of the programs, the distribution and caring of shop stewards. My question then is, are they singing from the same song sheet? Do they also are on your side to say we are negotiating for 15 years for professionalism in education? Because I have my doubts, and I will not express my doubts and try to substantiate those doubts, but let me just leave it there. Coming to Program 1, Chairperson, the unfair labor practices of 59%. And here I must ask the question in relation to, how can I say, who's taking care of salary problems? Because sometimes teachers go into unrest, and only in the last part of your conclusion I heard about OSD. And OSD is not covered very much in your presentation. It's actually it was absent up until your concluding remarks, which is to me a shortcoming, and I would like the committee to hear more on that one, Chairperson. And then my question with regard to I've noted what you said, Mr. Governor, with regard to the collective agreements as opposed to what you want to do in terms of quality teaching. And I think I would like to support that. So it is not only about collective agreements any longer, it's also about what we need to should happen in the classrooms. Chairperson, then my question with regard to, just a comment, I think the teacher development summit was also very, as a breakthrough, and I would like to commend you on your work there. But then the laptop initiative. Yes, the information that we get it's informative, but I think you need also to go a step further to see whether, you know, some of the laptops will get into the network of already existing infrastructure, if I may put it that way. The last one is on your second last is on the finances. Your cash, this is not calculated, it's just approximate, 29 million cash. What are you doing with that kind of money? And whilst I say this against the absence of research, there's no research other than, you know, counting on research from HRSC and maybe other research agents. What then, my question then will become to you, what kind of research have you engaged in having this kind of money so that you can assist what we want to achieve in the public education? Chairperson, and then the work of the PCTA, it needs to be commended, but I think the 12.7% teachers, it will create problems for us in future. We'll all need to work together to see how we can address that. Thank you, Chair.
To Honorable Smith, Honorable Tina.
Chairman, I also want to comment on the percentage, a large percentage of disputes that ELFC are handling. As to say, really, I think we'll be happy as this committee to hear what are the programs that they have to educate and teach the educators, all the people involved in the Department of Education, for them or for us to see that percentage of disputes becoming lesser than having LRC as fire extinguishers, where they will sit and wait for all these disputes to come to them. What is it that they do for them to prevent such disputes? And maybe if we can get the nature of them exactly from their assessment, what causes so much disputes and what is it that they can do around that issue? Secondly, on the program, PCTA, yes. I think, again, I would be very much happy if ever I could hear the link of the whole program linking with the Department of Health. I've heard the whole program caters for educators and their families. What happens when the educator is gone? The families, there are so many orphans, maybe they are linked with other departments, social welfare, and all those things. And I think that program, we can be happy to hear as to how far does it go so that it does not end exactly with the educator, while the educator is still alive, and what happens after that. On finances, I don't know if ever we can get a report that breaks down exactly what are the things that are being done by LRC, and we see the allocation of funds when it is being broken down, and we can see exactly what is happening. But what I'm interested in is that surplus, the surplus that we have right now. I've just heard that there are programs that are there in place that you are going to make use of the surplus, and within 3 years, it should be, you won't have it. I'm interested to know what is it. Is it still within the mandate, or are we extending the projects and programs that you already have, or are you coming up with new programs altogether so that you make use of the money that is the surplus? And again, I'm worried if you say we are thinking of increasing the subscription fees from the educators, bearing in mind that you are the ones that have been telling us that the lecturers from the FET sector is not yet included here, and I think by then we are already waiting for a little bit of increase of what is coming to you as an RLC. So what informs you, again, we have got this surplus, we've got a project program that we are not sure of, what we don't know what is it that will do, but at the same time, we're still waiting for that sector to come in. At the same time, are we still waiting for increase on the subscription? If we can get a clarity around that issue so that we see exactly why what is it that you are planning to do. For now, Chairperson, let me end there.
Honorable Mposi.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've got about 20 questions, but I'll try to condense them into a reasonable number. Your introductory remarks struck me when you said, for instance, you are negotiating professionalism. I didn't quite understand, because you look at other professions. I've never heard of other professions negotiating professionalism. What does that mean? And also celebrating excellence in education. Do we really have that excellence to be celebrated, not unless it's interpreted differently from my interpretation of what is obtaining? And my last two, you also indicated that there have been a drop in disputes in different provinces, KZN, for instance. What could be the contributing factors to that lowering of disputes in provinces? And lastly, procedural unfair. You said some dismissals were tempered by not having acted, the department not having acted procedurally. Is it in terms of Section 33 of the Constitution, or in terms of Labor Relations Act? What is it exactly? And the very last one. We appreciate this, what we call it, quality learning what and teaching campaign that you are supporting. But the question is, especially during election times, some unions have a tendency of leaving their classrooms, and they announce that they will be campaigning for certain organizations, and which happened in the last election. But I didn't hear some sounds from either yourselves or even the education department, you know, especially the province where I come from. Teachers actually left their classrooms, you know, and the children unattended, you know, in spite of this clarion call by the president, though he made the clarion call afterwards, but he didn't then, you know. What would have been your views and... Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Makube.
No, thanks, Chuck. Thanks for the presentation as well. Just a few questions. The first would relate to the district around the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, which you mentioned it's mainly around salaries. I think three dimensions, or let me emphasize two. One, you're saying it's dropping, or it's at 14%. Can it be that teachers necessarily are satisfied with their remunerations? The fact that many of them may be leaving the country, probably going to be employed elsewhere in other countries. What does that mean? The bargaining process was a three-year kind of discussion, which would have agreements lasting for about 3 years. It was like the union wanted the situation was back to annual agreements. Where are we now? Are we in agreement, or are there problems? The OSD engagements and implementation, you're saying probably it may be about the public service and not necessarily within the bargaining council. Where are we? I thought even in the teaching fraternity we've got problems. Is it being implemented smoothly, or there's no need? What is it that is happening currently? I as well thought that we could, as government, avoid the unfair procedures, because the people we're engaging, I take it, are legal gurus as well. What could be the problems that from time to time we've got such procedurally unfair or deficiencies within or weaknesses within this particular process? Or what is it that we're doing? I've seen that you're engaging even in training, even on the panelists are being engaged in, but I thought there could be more onto it. The other, you're saying that you've equally adopted the Thupili principles, but when you elaborated, I wasn't quite sure whether we're elaborating in line with the Thupili principles, or that is the basis, but we've got others that were actually formulated as our own values within the strict. I think you can clarify that particular issue. Just on a lighter note, as I conclude probably, you said you met somebody from Centec and advised that if they could have a discounted virus-free kind of software. And I take it at some point you met various institutions, and this time you were advising a particular institution. Is it fair to do that, or we could, or we may need a situation where all of them are actually advised the same way, so that they're able, if they have to develop a particular software, they are on a fair basis. Now that we have moved from 2 rand to 5 rand, each government, employer, employee, 50%, and we seem to be having this surplus, is it not that probably we've got more than we wanted? In terms of our programs or what initially we were supposed to do, hence now we can even take up a secondary kind of mandate like your laptop, which to me are not your core business. And I'm just wondering in that regard whether you are not as well encroaching in work that is supposed to be done by other institutions. Perhaps you can clarify that, whether your quality teacher learning and teaching campaigns and all that, whether they were not necessarily being or supposed to be taken up by other institutions. But as well, why do we call it a campaign? I know each time there's underlying thinking or philosophy in that regard, but in your own understanding, why do you call this a campaign if we're running it as government?
Thanks. I'm under pressure. The members are going to have to go to a meeting with the Cuban delegation who are on higher education. So I'm going to try and ask you not, no, Anel. Honorable Nida, sorry.
Initially, I have thought that most of the colleagues have kind of covered me. But I've got only two questions which might not necessarily be new, but I think the issues that I would have wanted to raise on those questions have not been been covered by the colleagues. One, on the issue of, maybe let me also add my voice in appreciating the presentation, because I think when I was looking more especially on the financial part of it, it really gives a picture of an institution that knows what it's doing and it's very responsible for taxpayers' money, which is what ourselves as a portfolio committee should make sure that we look with a very sober eye on that part. It's really appreciated. But on the issue of the HIV/AIDS program, I'm interested in checking how far have you gone into bringing in other stakeholders that might be relevant within the South African borders to your programs in terms of making sure that you either merge with them or you've got a memorandum of understanding with them. I'm basing this on one of your challenges, which says there is a threat to your sustainability of the program on the basis of both funds and resources in other aspects as well. Meaning which if you involve those stakeholders, then you might have some responsibilities that you might not necessarily need to take care of them yourself, but you might need to dispatch them to other stakeholders to make sure that they run with them. The last one, Chairperson, whilst one really appreciates the initiative of the teacher laptop, I'm not sure whether we are aware that here in Mzansi we've got schools that are still having classrooms that are under the trees, where they are in peripheral areas that have got where kids have never seen electricity, where a teacher herself has never had a PC, let alone a laptop. I'm trying now to understand whether you will first pilot the project whilst the department on its mandate is engaging the government, other departments to make sure that in those areas where the infrastructure is not there, the infrastructure is made to be available whilst the project is being seen, its efficiency and effectiveness in other areas, before it is then taken to those areas. Because, you know, one of the critical areas that governments get to be very much put under spotlight on is the issue of effectiveness, where you continuously provide skeleton programs that have got no infrastructure awaiting before those programs are introduced to those particular areas. Thanks, Chairperson. That was all.
Well, thank you very much, Honourable Member, for the questions and comments. I think from my side, Chair, just to get an indication on the HIV and AIDS intervention that is in place now, the project, in terms of the funding, how is it facilitated directly to the organization or through the department and the accounting mechanism to the donor of that particular program? Secondly, it relates to the project target. Assess the National Strategic Plan 2007-2011 and how we report to that as an institution. How to ensure that what we do is reported to that and what is the target out of that plan reflects on what you're doing. The other issue is on the implementation of agreements versus their success rates and how to implement, are they implemented successfully and what is that rate. But lastly, Chair, I think everybody has been speaking on the issue of the teacher laptop. I think what Honourable Makurela was raising for me is quite important. Are you not taking what is not supposed to be your role into your role? But if it is, I mean, how do you implement? Because you said to either this year or next year, which for me is not quite clear, because you've got to know the target. The President has set the target, and where are you against the target that the President has set? To respond, and then members of your delegation can respond from wherever they're sitting. They don't necessarily have to come this way to respond.
Thanks, Chairperson. Thanks, members.
I'll answer issues at a time, not the individual questions. So let's just start off with dispute resolution. Clearly, it's not the issue of salary, but the non-payment of salaries is what is an enforceable matter in terms of the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, or the not granting of leave to educators. So that's what we call by basic enforcement of Basic Conditions of Employment. And so you will find that departments, especially temporary educators, do not get paid on time. Or there is a deduction made from a teacher that is not properly explained. And those are the kinds of issues we deal with under the enforcement of the Basic Conditions of Employment Act. The question about salaries and whether teachers are satisfied, I think from a human resources point of view, we learn that money is not necessarily the answer to every question. If we take teachers and compare them to other professions, we'll have one conclusion. If we take teachers in South Africa and compare them to our colleagues in Mozambique and Tanzania, we may arrive at another conclusion. So the issue of salaries, I will leave best for trade unions and the employers to engage with. But I think the issue of salaries is being addressed, I think, since 1995. In 1995, we made the first major decisions about salaries of public servants and teachers. And then comes, along the way, the general increases, and then the OSD. I think in relation to the occupation-specific dispensation, although it is a matter that was agreed to in principle at the Public Service Coordinating Bargaining Council, education as a sector in 1997 had to begin its own negotiations on what we think is appropriate for teachers. Clearly, there is a rationale that says we now got to recognize in South Africa that you have to treat different sectors or employment sectors in the public service differently. Surely doctors need to be remunerated at a particular level commensurate with their qualifications and the service they render, which must be very different from teachers and the dynamics that exist. So that's the rationale that underpinned the occupation-specific dispensation. The challenge for the two major trade unions, Combined Trade Union SATU and the Combined Trade Union SAOU, now called the Independent Teachers Union, and the department, is to agree on what then are the appropriate requirements for the teaching sector. And we've done enough research. If you look at the research support we're going to give you, we've done enough research locally. We paid the HSRC, Honorable Member Smiley, to do that research. It's not their research, it's the ELRC research. Right? We've done enough comparative research. So it's for the trade unions and the department to recognize what is best for teachers, given the research we've done, and put those measures in place. The issue about OSD, it has taken too long. That's the issue. We started in 1997, and we finally signed collective agreements 1 and 2 at the beginning of 2008. And then we had issues to follow up from there. And those took a long time. We've only concluded collective agreements 2 and 4 of 2009, long after that financial year was over. So parties have to find a way in which they can speed up the negotiations and give teachers what I think is a framework for a dispensation. Collective agreements 2 and 4 would have resolved much of the issue. But the problem that arises even in 2 and 4, we still set in motion further processes that are also going to be delayed by the manner in which that is done. Let's just take the issue of, so that's the issue of OSD and the salaries. Let's take the issue of laptops.
Government gets a 3207, only asks the General Secretary to do a few things, to assist with the blacklisting of educators, see how best they can get finance, to look at the issue of funds, see whether the tax allowance or the tax on the allowance is minimized, to assist the trade unions in putting a proposal. Ultimately, we only do facilitative work, so there's no major expenditure other than the basic meeting refreshments that we provided in that respect. But why have we liaised Microsoft South Africa? Because they already have an agreement with the Department of Education on providing schools with free or discounted software. They don't use the word free. They use the word discounted, okay, which is almost negligible, the amount to be paid. For example, if we take the total package that Microsoft South Africa is providing to the department, via the department to the schools, they would be able to pay 390 rand for something that will cost us 3,900, that if we had to buy from Incredible Connection. Symantec South Africa itself also have donated $25 million in the form of programs for the Department of Education to the schools. So approaching them, those two, to say, can you give the school's program and adapt that to the laptop initiative so that teachers don't have to buy the full-price software? So that's why we did not go to anybody else. So we stuck to the people that currently are providing government and the schools with the discounted software. So that's Microsoft South Africa and Symantec South Africa. Obviously, Microsoft South Africa got permission from the headquarters to even extend the school's agreement to the laptop. So Symantec South Africa is also going to be doing the same, hopefully. In respect of, I think the question was on quality learning and teaching. And why are we involved, like the laptop? I think, firstly, we bring together two important parties. We bring together the department and the trade unions. And so if the departments and the trade unions are working on a project, we are a neutral forum that can expedite their interactions without bargaining. So we do not bargain on the laptop issues, but we work collectively to address that. We do not bargain on the quality learning and teaching campaign. We are doing that voluntarily. And why should we be involved? Well, firstly, we have the two most important parties in public education. The department, which has the constitutional mandate to deliver public education to the children of our country. And then the trade unions, who interact with the department not just on labor matters, on a range of matters. And so the ELRC becomes a neutral forum. So the quality learning and teaching campaign, although it starts with the teacher, the department and the teacher union, involves more people. And so if our council is to go beyond labor matters, then the quality teaching and learning campaign is an opportunity. But I think we're responding not just to the call of our president, I think there's a call that our people are making to us, and that is saying, can we please improve the quality of education we are providing to them? The mother in that school that's under the tree is asking, even though you don't have a shelter here, but you can still provide quality education. And there are schools that, despite the fact that they're under a tree, have been shining examples. And these have been recognized through the National Teaching Awards and the National School Awards that is conducted every year. And the ELRC is actively involved in recognizing that excellence. So whereas we can say overall public education is not doing well, it's not good enough, the results we're producing for our children, but there are pockets of excellence that exist. And that's what we have to recognize, that's what we have to encourage, and that's what we have to give as hope to others, that despite the fact that we may not have
a building we can still excel. Okay? And there are these pockets of excellence throughout. And so we support that initiative that takes place. Every year we are actively involved. In relation to the disputes and the processes involved with KwaZulu-Natal and why it's working, let's be clear. KwaZulu-Natal at one stage used to have about 500 disputes declared a year. We used to work with the department and the trade unions to firstly minimize the thousands of disputes on promotions. And so 500 would emerge. Of the 500, we'll work together as a team. And we used to have expedited processes. And I think the parties have learned. We've created a dispute prevention committee in our chamber in KwaZulu-Natal, and parties work through issues. That's why we've dropped the number of disputes in KwaZulu-Natal from 500 to about 144. There's two truths about dispute resolution. If a teacher or a worker gets dismissed, and they always want somebody to tell them. That's why the CCMA, almost 90% of its disputes is about dismissals. And almost every dismissed worker invariably will go to the CCMA to just make sure that they have not been hard done by. Likewise, a teacher is going to do the same. So that's dismissals. But promotions and appointments is an area, although it's 60% of our disputes, is one that we can begin to address. The first major problem is we do not have quality standards that determines who is eligible for promotion or not. As a result, anybody can apply. A governing body can sit with 3,000-4,000 applications. How is that governing body of poor parents going to decide who is the best teacher of the 3,000-4,000 applications? At one stage in KwaZulu-Natal, there was much as 80,000 applications made to one school. Okay? Now, you certainly can't have a situation like that. Okay? Or 80,000 applications for 1,000 posts. Okay? Now, that's virtually an average of 8,000, okay, per post. Now, clearly, that's the first area. The second is we need to have better guidelines that informs governing bodies. Because promotions have been the way of moving up. What OFD was going to address, and hopefully it should address, is that a good teacher can remain in the classroom, become a teaching and learning specialist or a senior teacher, or a senior teaching and learning specialist and a master teacher. That will obviate the fight for promotion post. So you require a combination of approaches that need to be taken into account. Now, whether the trade unions and the departments actually do this, I have no idea. But it is on the agenda. It is the basis of the current OSD agreement that we create multi-level opportunities for teachers. And so that in itself may minimize disputes. Procedural unfairness, I think, firstly, Schedule 8 of the Labor Relations Act provides the guidelines for procedural fairness. But more importantly, I think the Department of Education has enough regulations that gives them, that ties them down further onto what procedures they must follow. So not following those procedures strictly results in procedural unfairness. But procedural unfairness is not a sufficient to reinstate anybody or to grant them relief. Therefore, compensation will be provided in the case of procedural unfairness. So that's an area that needs to be worked on, and departments need to improve their compliance. Perhaps Judge Andre Fanny Kerk in the Labor Court in Avril Elizabeth Holmes, that's the case, said, "We don't need a criminal justice model when we don't have lawyers in the department that are going to fire teachers or charge teachers. And if we are going to give principals and other officials more powers,
then surely a principal is not a lawyer. So you need a simpler system that and rules that the principal or any other official can use. I'm going to ask my colleagues to come in, firstly on the PCTA. Only in relation to funding, I will just talk about a bit and then give it the issue of funding and the funding requirements. Our minister and our director general firstly supported the application that we made for our HIV/AIDS intervention programs. And for the record, there are two programs that exist for teachers. One is called the ELRC Prevention Care Treatment Access Program, in which all unions are involved, including SATU at the governance level and for cooperation. And then SATU runs its own program called the Palliative Prevention Care Treatment and OVC, Often with Vulnerable Children Program. And so these are the two biggest. Both are funded by the U.S. government through the PEPFAR funds via the CDC. Okay. So that's the two that we have. And so the you will find that from an accounting point of view, the Director General is accounted to by at least the ENRC project, and any funding that is received is declared. That's why we are reporting to you in Parliament about that. I have been to the U.S. I have met the person that pushed, that piloted the PEPFAR 1 and now recently PEPFAR 2, Congressman Donald Payne, to also praise him of the projects that we are running and the kind of work that we are doing. And so that's from a funding requirement. If Dr. Pulen can answer the other questions on HIV/AIDS, then Mr. Mushaga, you can answer the questions on the finance matters.
Thank you, Chairperson. There was one question asked about the link of our project to the Department of Health and how we actually link up with the Department of Social Development in taking care of orphans and vulnerable children. And my response to this question is, we're only 2 years in the program, and we do want to grow and expand the scope of our program, but we are only just focused on educators and their families, and we will go on even to include even learners as we grow the project. And In the year three now, we intend to engage monitoring and evaluation experts who will strengthen our capacity in collecting information and reporting our statistics. And we will be able to make sure that our interventions are aligned to the National Strategic Plan and that we can be able to report to the NSP. And then there was a question also about seeking partnerships with other stakeholders to ensure sustainability. And I think in my presentation I did mention that as the PCTA, we are aware that we cannot go it alone, and we are seeking partnerships with other players. So, yes, we are partnering with other groups. Thank you.
Just one or two things on what you just said. We have a problem with us as government or as South Africa having these fragmented programs. The reason I raise this is that South Africa accounts on the NSP, which is led by the Deputy President of the country, Honorable Khalima Motlanthe, through SANEC, in terms of HIV and AIDS response to the country overall. It does not say that if you are sitting in education, educators, therefore you can't be part of that. There are clear targets on the NSP 2007-2011 in terms of how South Africa must respond. Hence, I'm saying that I would have a problem with that approach to say we are 2 years, therefore we can't be, you know, linked with others. I mean, Department of Health and Department of Education is government, one thing. And therefore, it can be difficult to link up and make sure that our response is a response to what has been said as a target by the country. That plan is a country plan that we account to UN, that we account to everybody else, and therefore I can't find it that we have other targets outside that. the approaches are all that, all stakeholders. And I know for a fact that Director General Hinde has reported to FANEC and said these are the things, but there's been a challenge of linkage. And I'd appreciate that if the department can try and close that gap, because we can't afford whereby funds are all over the place. There's no coordination, there's no coherence in what we do as government. It would be a problem, because that's why you lose resources. You might find that what you are raising, that's why I'm raising this thing, there's funds from Global Fund in terms of programs for HIV and AIDS in the country. Around, I think now they're on round 10 of applications that you could be able to benefit and support the program. But because of this fragmentation and isolation of program and not coherence of working, you end up with resources not really being utilized effectively. So I would really appeal that we have this integration and perhaps maybe ask that you report to the committee within 2 months to see how we sort of link with the Department of Education, because it becomes a problem for us.
Chairperson, I think you are right. Firstly, the ELRC is not an NGO. We're a public entity. Anything we do must be driven must be in line with the priorities of government and in line with its policies. And so clearly the work that we're doing in HIV/AIDS is part of that total plan, and I think appropriately, therefore, we link to the department, bring the unions on board in partnership in terms of their programs, and I think we will report in future on a more integrated and coordinated approach in this regard. Chair?
Thank you, Chair. I have picked up about 3 or 4 questions, and I think one was a request in terms of reporting. The first one was, why not use excess cash or excess funds for research? And I think the accounting officer has touched on that. We do use available cash in case we need to go into research, or the HSRC was commissioned by the Education Labor Relations Council to do research on the issues of demand and supply, which resulted in the PCTA program being done. And I think also in the annual report, we have reported a few research activities which maybe we didn't name it correctly, but I think we have indicated we had study visits which form part of the project activities as identified by council. The next one that I want to come to is again dealing with the surplus. There was a concern raised about the FETC sector going to be part of the ELRC. That might even increase the surplus that will be coming to the ELRC. But however, I think it is the opposite, in that the accounting officer had indicated that we will be subsidizing that bargaining unit because of their number, which doesn't really make themselves as such self-sustainable. So in terms of the 3-year budget that we have already submitted for approval, we have indicated in the that a couple of millions will be used to supplement the or to subsidize activities of the Federal Education and Training Colleges. The last one, I think, is the temptation, which I think was mentioned, on the temptation to use excess cash for non-core business. The way we would be doing our operations is through the accounting authority, who would normally approve and ensure that the operations and the activities are within the strategic objectives as determined by the accounting authority. And in the end, is the executive authority who would give us the go-ahead to use resources for the operations as indicated. The last one, I think it was more of a request, which we are going to accede to. A report in the future should give and provide a breakdown of the use of funds in terms of the different operations and projects. That has been acceded to. I will ensure in the future that the report will indicate how the funds have been used in line with the projects that have been reported on the performance information side. Thank you.
If I can just conclude this question answer. The question was, what do we mean by negotiating professionalism? Clearly, the first 10 years of our existence as the ELRC, we focused on what people termed as labor matters. In the next 5 years, and that was the last, I began to put the question, and that is, as the bargaining council for teachers, no matter what agreement we conclude, ultimately impacts on the profession. And surely that the issue of professionalism is one that must be at the minds of our negotiators. Whether we are representing educators who have sexually molested children, I think the issue of ethics is something that must be paramount in the minds of the trade union. Surely, at some point, a trade union will have to say, we cannot defend the indefensible. In relation to collective bargaining, we have to acknowledge that if we are talking about creating an OSD, that OSD is about giving teachers better opportunities, not just to earn more money. The teacher is going to earn more money, but I think what the public is expecting is a better outcome. The results in the schools are improving, that the quality of our education is improving. And so that's why the public and government is going to invest in public education in terms of teachers and the salaries. So the challenge for us in the next 5 years is to put professionalism at the center of all negotiations and ensure that that is what underpins what we do in this council. I said earlier I'd rather have few collective agreements, but that we can look at the value. At this point, the chairperson asked the question, what is the success rate of the implementation of collective agreements? Now, clearly, it's an area we are not measuring. If we look at the disputes that get declared, clearly we don't have 100% success rate. Okay? But if you ask me what is the percentage, I'm unable to tell you. And so perhaps that's an issue we're going to have to address as the management in putting proper measures in place. If you take dispute resolution, the one major change we have made is we've now put measurable objectives. And even though we didn't achieve them, what I'm proud of the fact is that we now have clear measures that we can work towards and ensure that we achieve them in a general sense. And if you look at our dispute resolution report, it's on page 26, 27. We have now, for the first time, compared to previous years, Chairperson, we've identified proper measures around our efficiencies that we can give to you on dispute resolution. And similarly, I think we look at collective bargaining and look at what impact that agreements are having and the extent to which they've been implemented. Okay. Those are two areas we are unable to respond to you because we have not had a system in place to do that. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the responses. I think it was quite fruitful in terms of engagement. I just want to, as part of wrapping up, just to say that we would expect a report on the issue of finances detailing what is funded, at what level. If it's possible, if we can get it before the House rises, we are going to rise from the 20th. If we can get it within the week of the 16th, that report. And as well, would appreciate if the Secretary, that we can time put that measure of checking the success rate in terms of the implementation of the agreement, because you can't keep on putting agreements and therefore not having a measure to evaluate their success. And if by the so that you put it as part of your target, and therefore by the next term when you report to the next financial year, we'd like to have that as reflected when you report to the committee. The last one is the PCTA linkage with the NSP and SANET. If you can have that initiative starting and even a progress report within the same week of the November before we write the house rise, so that we can monitor progress in ensuring that government programs are sort of tried to link it. In those few ways, I don't know if there's anything to just appreciate the delegation from the LRC for the presentation. I think the engagement has been quite fruitful. It has been able to assist with as Chairperson Fatima said, Honourable Member Joanna said, that majority of members in the committee are new, but we are fortunate we have a lot of teachers in the committee, so you might have picked up as you were engaging, that you're engaging with people who've been on the field, have been part of the process, and I think that's what is the strength within the committee. So I think we just want to appreciate the presentation and the engagement, and we're hoping that continuously we'd engage. We don't want you to come to us when you are here to account on your annual report, but time to time interact with us with issues that we'd like us to deal with. On those few words, I'd like to thank you for this presentation and being part of the committee. Thank you. And
just
that one, they have clarified that it has been improved. It was the old one that we received. Yeah, there's another one that they circulated, the black and white one. Yes, that's the reference you must use. Thank you very much, members. I declare the meeting closed. Please, members, remain classed. The meeting is closed.